Excuse me, it's the operator, and I just need to inform all participants that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the Thick Who Is PDP call on Tuesday, 21st of May. On the call today, we have Mark Anderson, Alan Greenberg, Volker Grayman, Steve Mitalitz, Mike O'Connor, Susan Prosser, and Jill Titcher. We have apologies from Marie-Laure Lemineur, Don Blumenthal, Avery Doria, and Frédéric Guillemot. And from staff, we have Marika Conning, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, and myself, Judas Charvelin. May I remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thanks, Julia. This is Mikey, and I'll just note that I just saw Carolyn Hoover pop into the Adobe room, and I think we've noted Alan's on the call already. Welcome as well to you, Alan. It's unfortunate, but I've sort of trained everybody to show up a little bit late for these calls, so I'm expecting some more people to come in, and so I'll fill just a few more minutes with the usual pause for changes to statement of interest, and note that the agenda is quite short. We're simply going to work our way through the draft of the initial report today and sort of follow our noses on that. I've got some ideas about that. But I'll take a moment to just see if anybody would like to add anything to the agenda or tell us about a change to statement of interest.
Yeah, this is Steve Mitalitz. I've changed my statement of interest. It's not really relevant particularly to this group, but to reflect the fact that the lawsuit in which my law firm was involved against ICANN has been settled.
Oh, it's been settled. Cool. I hope. Anyway, thanks for the update. Anybody else got any other updates that they want to share? Okay, well, as you saw on the list, I sort of went into editing mode in the middle of last week. And Marika and I have produced the first draft of the initial report, which will be the document that I think we will use from now on as our vehicle for edits, changes, discussion, etc. And my thought here is that, and I'm sort of killing a little more time. I'm hoping a few more folks from the data protection group will join the call just to round out this discussion a bit. But my thought is that on this call, we will sort of take on great big issues that drive people crazy, if there are any, and then work our way through a couple of sections that I edited pretty severely and also work through a discussion of how to summarize the data protection and privacy section. Marika and I have provided a choice on that. And then it sort of progressively work down to finer and finer levels of detail with the hope that we can be done in a few weeks with this draft and push it along to ICANN to be released prior to the Durban meeting. It would be nice to get it out a few weeks in front of the meeting since it'll get us out in front of the traffic jam on that. So I'm done. I've used up all of my items that I want to fill. So I want to take a moment and just ask those of you that are on the call, in general, clearly the most general question is that this report recommends that we proceed with the standard of Thick Who Is for all registries in the new, in all GTLDs. I just want to take a moment since that's the very highest level question, to see if anybody disagrees with that, because this would be a good time to surface those points and have that conversation. So I'll take this moment. I'm going to have to come back to it because I don't feel like we've got quite enough people on the call, especially from the NCSG, to feel comfortable that we're really there. But for those of you that are on the call, is there anybody that wants to disagree with that conclusion? I'm not seeing anybody in the chat, and I'm not seeing any cue, so I'm then going to move on to the next item, sort of on my punch list anyway, which is if we roll down to about line 656, I'm going to leave control of the document in your hands so that if you want to roll up and down, you can. But it's 656.
Mikey, this is Marika. I think the numbering between the Word version and the PDF version may have changed because I think some of the... So that's my fault. I think for the
that's
next
right.
version, I'll make sure that the PDF version is the one that's the determinative one when we maybe quote the line
yep.
numbers, because I think it sometimes changes depending on how you factor in track changes and deleted text.
Okay. So the corrected number is 791. I'm now at that section, and I didn't know that. That's interesting to find out. I'll have to pay attention to that as well. Cause
it may be a Mac issue, possibly, because I think basically if you look at the PDF version, I think it has moved all the deleted text that's long or big comments to actually the end of the document. Well, I think in the Word version actually keeps it there, and that changes. I think that changes the line numbering. But I think normally the PDF version should be the determinative one, because I think that's where it does stay the same and doesn't change. So
yeah,
I'll make sure to include two versions and encourage people to refer to the line numbering in the PDF version.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. Anyway, thanks, Marika. The real number is 791, and basically. What we did is provided you a choice, and the choice is between the first one, option A, is basically a conclusion that mirrors the pattern of the rest of the conclusions in section 5, which is the big meaty section of this report. And it is a little bit longer than most of them. Most of them simply say the working group finds that, you know, this is okay, whatever it is that we're talking about. The data protection and privacy one's a little more complicated than that, and so the option A version's a little bit longer. And I wanted to walk you through sort of what we did. We sort of split this into two chunks and said, okay, in data protection, all that conversation about data at rest, data in motion, et cetera, our finding is pretty much the same as it is in all the other sections, that the working group either doesn't find a difference or it finds that there's an improvement of some sort. In this particular case, in this section, we didn't really find a difference that's unique to this issue. And then we split off the privacy issue and yanked a piece out of the conclusions section of the privacy and data protection group and pasted it in there. That's basically a recommendation that says, look, there are some knotty questions and those should be addressed during the implementation phase. So that's option A. That's sort of how we arrived at it. And And then option B is, I believe, a straight copy of Allen's draft of the list, although I can't, that went through a few revisions, and I can't remember exactly which one was the final, but it's at least got its origin in that document. And so the choice for the group is which, if either of these, is suitable, and are there any changes that should be made? I see Q is starting to build, so we'll go over there and start with Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Steve Metallitz.
Oh, Steve, just a note before you continue. You're very faint today. I don't know if it's a close to the microphone issue. It was hard to hear you the last time. So if you're a bit further away than normal from the mic, if you could swallow it, that would be great.
Okay, I'll try to do that. Is this better?
Oh, way better. Thank you.
Okay. 2 points here, really. First, I think the three lines about data protection probably could be in either option A or option B. I mean, I don't think that's really where the difference exists. But I, as far as the privacy statement, I'm very much in support of option B. And in fact, I don't think option A is an accurate reflection, certainly, of what was produced by the subteam. If you look back, and I'm looking at the Word document here, so my line numbers will be different, but there's a paragraph beginning on line 636 that says this subject is especially complex when it comes to drawing conclusions, and it flags that it's beyond the capacity of the working group to address conclusively and also may spill beyond the bounds of the scope of this working group in case of certain issues. The text you have got there in option A really comes after that, but I flagged that earlier passage because, you know, I'm part of the group that feels that this is definitely outside the scope of the working group to reach a conclusion that says, you know, the general counsel needs to do further work on this before we move toward thick who is. I think that's mixing apples and oranges. There are certainly issues relating to privacy in who is that are going to be looked at by the general counsel as well as a lot of other groups, including the experts working group that's working right now and the PDP that's supposed to follow that. So we will have plenty of time over the next decade, I predict, because I think all the steam has gone out of the fast-track idea on the who is experts group, or virtually all of it. But we're going to have plenty of time to debate those issues about who is. If we say we have to go through all that before we adopt a policy for thick who is, you know, we're never going to get there. It will be overtaken by all the other changes that are coming to who is down the pike. So that's why I feel that is really out of scope. And I, from my perspective, it was okay to include all that in the subteam report as long as we prefaced it by saying some people think it's outside the scope. And I would not want to see it as a conclusion, which you have in option A. So I'm strongly in favor of option B for the privacy discussion. I think the first three lines of option A, I think, are fine if we want to break out data protection and privacy. Otherwise, I would support option B. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. And as a drafter, I would take that option A, moving, you know, the data protection chunk, and moving it into both options as a friendly amendment. I think that's a great catch. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I generally agree. It's a fine conclusion to say the general counsel's office and 1,000 other working groups and the expert working group and the great computer that comes after us will all need to look at privacy with respect to who is and data protection with respect to who is and a whole 1,000 other things with respect to who is. Our question is, to what extent does it impact in meaningful, definable ways, thick versus thin. And if we can't address that, it's not part of our conclusions. I mean, if we can't identify what the rationale is. You know, so we flagged an important issue. I'm afraid we're not the first ones to have done it. We won't be the last. But
yeah,
we need to focus on what the question was.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, at least so far, is to combine the first part of option A and option B and move the highlighted piece, which on my screen is purple, back where it came from, which is up a couple of paragraphs. You know, I don't think anybody's suggesting that we lose that paragraph.
I'll admit, I have not had the time to go through this thoroughly. I actually took several days off. I'm not sure that analysis is something I put my stamp of agreement on, although it probably sounds rational. But I would be careful about making conclusions that are not one of the questions.
Righto. Okay. Steve, is that a new hand or an old one?
Oh, that's old. I'm sorry. I'll take it down.
Okay. Well, okay. So given this conversation, that's where I'll go on this section. Now, let me, on the screen, the line number I want to point you to is 707. It's several pages back. In order to make room for my conclusions heading that we were just looking at, I changed the title of what the subteam called conclusions to be discussion. And I just want to highlight that for you and see if that's an issue. I'm happy to change it back to conclusions. I was mostly doing that for stylistic reasons. And I want to use that as sort of the launch pad to point out a couple of changes. Most of the changes I made to the document were grammatical or stylistic, but there were some substantive ones. And one of them is in not necessarily this section so much, but in the privacy and data protection section. Let me find an example. Up at 688, and I did this a couple times, but this is a good example. The subteam said it is beyond the ability of the work group to do an exhaustive review of applicable rules and contract provisions. And for some reason, as I was editing, I liked the word capacity better than ability. I don't think that we lack the ability. I think we have lots of smart people that are able to do this. Our problem is that we are limited in terms of the bandwidth that we have available. And I guess part of the reason that, another reason I liked the idea of capacity better is that I didn't want somebody coming back and saying, well, if you weren't able to figure this out, how valid is your conclusion? So I just wanted to point to that and see what people's reactions were. I'm perfectly happy to change it back, and I'm also perfectly happy to be told that I'm overly sensitive about that issue. But I didn't want to draw your attention to that change, because unlike most of the stuff that I did to your work, this does have some substance. Alan, go ahead.
The use of the word rules, I think, is in relation to possible national, local rules. Two lines up, correct?
you know, I was staying pretty much within the sentence.
No.
There's an earlier instance of this.
There is two lines up in 686 on the screen anyway. A THICWHIS environment will provide additional assurances where local rules limit information disclosures.
Yeah.
Okay. In which case, not only is it beyond our capacity, it's beyond our scope to do a survey of all national rule, all local rules.
I would view that as a friendly amendment to my change.
Yes, but I think it makes it even stronger if you're worried about someone saying, but you didn't do your work.
Yeah, okay, so capacity
this work group is not expected to look at every local rule in existence in the world.
Yeah, okay.
And see what the implications are.
All right, so that's a good catch. Any other thoughts about this notion that I've got? It's that kind of thing that I would ask people on the working group to really, I mean, Steve has really ground through this document, so, but the rest of us need to go through this with a bit of a fine-tooth comb and just check my work, because I'm planning to go through it again, so I'm not promising that this is my final set of edits. But, you know, I did a lot of edits, and I want to go through it again and essentially take another pass with the plane to see if this is really smooth. All right, well, that's sort of it for privacy and data protection. Those are the two things I wanted to touch on with you. I think the overriding conclusion still stands that the working group does not feel that this is a showstopper issue, and that its overriding conclusion to recommend a transition to THICWHIS for all registries. So I'm paying special attention to this one because this was one of the knottier issues that we went through, and I want to make sure that we're comfortable. And for next week, I will go through and make that change. Now, if we go back to, Alan, your draft, I think, is the sub-team comfortable with that version of the draft, or is there another version that should be substituted?
Since I didn't look at it, point me where it is, and I'll look at it now.
New mouse on my computer, which is doing really weird things. It's on
is line 805
on the screen version.
Sorry, say that again?
It's 805.
805. Sorry, I heard two people giving numbers at the same time, and they merged.
Yeah, and it's 669 on the Word version that went out to the list. But I think 805 is a better target. Work off the one on the screen, otherwise we'll get confused.
Okay, we're not talking about option B, is 805.
Yeah, that's the one I want to check.
I thought you were talking about the section I worked on, not...
No.
Paragraph
I'm sorry.
Okay.
This was, I believe, based on your draft
okay.
of the summary. Now I may be mistaken on that as well. Marika pulled this. I think
the later version is the one that started off saying there are problems, not there may be problems. So this looks like the last draft.
Yeah. Okay.
Without holding it up to the light and comparing it, I suspect it is the last draft.
Can
that's
those
awful
of you,
hard on an LCD display, by the way.
Yeah, that is hard.
With you versions of Windows that have transparent displays, that might not be.
Oh,
mine
get out
doesn't.
Of here. Stop it. Stop that.
This is Marika. I think this version is indeed the latest one, and also includes the one sentence that I think that was added based on our conversation last time that basically says there are still working group participants who feel uneasy with the vast amounts of data that will need to be transferred across jurisdictional boundaries, but those have not translated into concrete concerns. I think that was something that was added based on some of the feedback that was received last week. So this is, as far as I know, I think the latest one that was sent out on the mailing list.
So do we have a sense of the, the level of consensus amongst the data, amongst the sub-team, that the sub-team is comfortable with this draft. I know I'm just drilling on a sore tooth here, but I really want to make sure that we've got this right.
Mikey, other than those who had the final conclusion, we shouldn't have a conclusion or a summary. But to be honest, I don't see how we can do our work without summarizing several pages into a yes-no. That's our job.
Yeah. All right. So what I'm going to do then is I'm going to rewrite this section and say that we'll combine the piece from option A that is not controversial and this piece from option B and call her done. Last call on this call will let the list beat it up a bit, but I thank you for putting up with my particular care over this issue. I think this is really important. Seeing agreement in the Adobe room show up. Good. Okay, the other one that I had a lot of trouble with, let me find it, is the synchronization and migration section. And I may have wrecked it in the process of trying to make sense out of it. So whoever gets there first, just sing out what the line number is. Have to roll back.
I think it's 905.
Thank you, Steve. 905. Yes, there it is. Okay, so I admit to being, and I'm perfectly willing to roll this whole section back to Marika's initial draft. I got puzzled by our section where we said that it was a disadvantage. First of all, I had trouble believing that it was possible where's my comment? Hold on a minute. I have to find my little comment. We get down to 959. I did a comment around the sentence that says, in thick registries, inconsistencies between the registrar who is and the registry who is may arise, as such modifications are not necessarily transmitted to the registrar. Effectively, registries and registrars could conceivably output completely different WHOIS data. And Volker, I'm going to put you on the spot. Oh, and Tim is on the call, too. Good deal. We've got folks who know what they're doing here. Is this possible? How is it possible for, in a thick registry, the registrar and the registry to get out of sync like that? I just wasn't sure that we had the right of this, and so I'm looking for help from smart people. Alan, go ahead.
You can have all sorts of problems. You can have just technical problems where things don't get updated properly. You can have a situation where multiple registrars claim to be the registrar of record for a domain, and the registry points to one of them and not the other, or perhaps points to a third one in some extreme case. There are all sorts of reasons. A number of registrars, I think Volker is one of them, and I'll let him speak, have said that if a court orders a registry to change a registrar, they do. That doesn't necessarily the old registrar of record, you know, updates their records immediately or at all. Thank you.
Before I go to Volker, I'm just a little startled that the protocol allows it, that the technical underpinnings allow
it. Well, perhaps it doesn't, but technology doesn't always work.
Well, yeah, okay, fine. But, I mean, it just seems...
I'm not even sure if the protocol has a command to say, erase everything you have about it, you're not in the loop.
Well, and now we get to somebody who knows what he's talking about.
Okay, that would be nice.
Take it away, Volker. Oh, you may be muted. You're being uncharacteristically quiet about this. I'll let Volker's mute unwind for a second and see if he joins us. Yep. He's toggling something. Tell you what, Volker, he's still toggling.
Why don't we let Mark...
I found it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we go. Now we're...
Can you hear me now?
Perfectly. Yep. There's a little echo. You may need to turn down your...
mute as well.
Just get really on top of the microphone on your computer and turn down the speakers and you'll be fine.
Better?
Much better. Go for it.
Okay. With a couple of cases where, indeed, as was explained earlier, that where we had a registry note informing us that they had implemented a court order where a domain name was to be transferred to a different registrar. So we displayed the domain name in our WHOIS because we simply did not know that the domain had been transferred by the registry. There have been cases where registries send us an email, but not an API command or an EPP command or just a notification that our system can read of the changes they had made. So that's the one issue, the one where we have experience and have seen synchronicities between the data of the domain name in our WHOIS and the one in another WHOIS. So yes, there are situations where the registrar who is can be out of sync with the registry data of who, which registrar the domain name is with. I'm not sure if that's the right way to do, but at least VeriSign and a lot of other registries in the U.S. they simply implement any court order they receive, even though the court order should have probably gone to the registrar.
So I have a question for Volker, and I'm going to be interested in hearing his thoughts on this as well. But before I leave you, Volker, is it true that the EPP protocol allows and permits the registry to tell you these things, that this is a case where the registry simply chooses not to?
Well, they could always send us a pull message that we could read, but in most cases this simply does not happen. Would they send, VeriSign at least sends us an email, OWASP sent us an email that based on a closed or not publicized court order, they were not allowed to tell us what, but they had performed certain actions with regard to domain names X, Y, and Z. So we didn't even have a chance to correct our WHOIS because we didn't know what happened, so we had to research it ourselves. So this is the kinds of things that do happen, and because the registry controls the database, they can do pretty much whatever they like.
Interesting. Okay, well, I probably need to take an action to rewrite my rewrite of this because I did not understand what actually happens. But thanks for that, Volker. Mark, you're next.
This is Mark. I don't really have anything new to add. I think it was already pretty well covered. Just, you know, the two scenarios is, you know, one, there's any number of reasons why a registrar might not update the registry. You know, so if a registrant changes their data, you know, that may get changed with the registrar but never updated with the registry. And I think Volker pretty well covered court orders, you know, in that, we act on all, you know, legitimate court orders that are received. And, you know, as Volker pointed out, you know, in some cases those court orders even prevent us from disclosing the contents of the, you know, the court order itself. So, you know, in some cases, you know, we can't even disclose what was updated. So those are two main instances where I'm aware of. You know, mostly the registry acts, you know, blindly based on the EPP commands received from the registrar. So, you know, assuming everything is properly received from the registrar, you know, then everything's in sync. But in some cases, you know, there's any number of reasons why that wouldn't wouldn't happen. And then of course court orders, which I think Volcker pretty well covered.
Just to clarify my understanding of the EPP protocol, however, it is possible for registries to send EPP commands to registrars, or is EPP a one-way deal?
The registrar initiates the commands, and there's responses to those commands. But I think in the spirit of what you're asking, it's a one-way. The registry cannot send EPP commands to a registrar.
Okay. I definitely need to rewrite my rewrite. I was completely confused. Thank you. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, 2 points. Number one, the kinds of problems we're talking about are not unique to SIC or FIN. I mean, clearly,
right.
In a FIN there is only one source per registrar of the data, but there may be multiple registrars who think they are the sponsor of a domain. And if you don't go back to the Rudy's time and ask the registry, you may well be dealing with inaccurate information.
Right.
And I believe your statement is on the screen, 940-941 is inaccurate. It says under SIC whois registrar.
Oh, yeah. No, you have to. Yeah, take all that purple text and just imagine.
Okay, but but I've heard this one before as stated as a fact, and I believe it is not. It says that registrars display the registry information. They may. There is nothing in the RAAI, I'm told, that compels them to go back to the registry. When you get information from a registrar, you don't know whose database it's coming from. If I'm incorrect, I'd be delighted to be told, but I've asked a number of people, including registrars and ICANN, and they seem to feel there is no compulsion about which whois a registrar displays if they are asked for it in a SIC environment.
Carolyn,
there may be a high chance that they do one or the other, but that's not certainty.
Carolyn, would it be all right? It looks like Volcker and Tim have come in response to Alan. Would it be all right if I go to them and just check?
Yeah, if they're responding. I was going to comment on the issue about updating poll messages from the registry.
Let's hold on that and drive this point of Alan's on line 940 to ground. Volcker and then Tim.
Yes, Alan is correct here. In the cases of thick registries, the registrar is pretty much able to take his own whois data and display it when he's asked, or take the registry whois if he's asked, so display a mirror. But in most cases, the registrar isn't even asked because nobody ever gets to the registrar from the registry, which is the normal way in a thin whois. You query the registry, which registrar, then you check the registrar for the domain name, and that later step is already not needed because you will already get the full information at the registry level. So for thick registries, the number of queries we get, I can probably count on one hand for one day.
Okay. That's very helpful. Tim?
Yeah, I was going to say pretty much the same thing except for that last part about counting them on one hand in one day. But anyway, the only thing I'll add is that what we don't want to forget about is that, that there is an RAA between ICANN and registrars, and there's a registry agreement between ICANN and the registries. But there's a third agreement that sometimes gets kind of forgotten about, and that's the agreement between the registry and the registrar. So ICANN, will accredit a registrar and say, yeah, you can do these particular GTLDs, but we still can't do those until we actually sign an agreement with the registry that provides that GTLD. So I can't tell you that there are any of those registry agreements that would require the registrar to display their whois, but that's a possibility. And so as we look at all this, I just don't want to overlook that. And in some cases, we might need to do some research or looking into or whatever, that other agreement that sometimes we all forget about.
Huh. Now, I'm getting a lot of great education. Alan, is this about this topic or is this a new topic?
I was just going to make an aside on what Tim just said. It can come later or now, as you wish.
Let's tie this topic off and then circle back to Carolyn.
Okay. I was just going to point out that Tim is very right about that. The curious thing is, although ICANN has how is the RRA amended on its website, it doesn't actually have the RRAs. For those, you need to go to the registry if you can find them. And all of the ones I've ever found point to an unpublished document as a core part of their of what they're requiring, that is the registry specification. So Tim is right. Not only do people forget about it, but it's nigh impossible to find out what it says in a larger, in a general sense, at least for the common man.
Hmm. Fascinating. Okay, well, I apologize. I trashed this section. I will go back through and rework it for next week. Carolyn, you're very patient. Thank you.
Yeah. Well. First, I'll mention to Alan that the .coop RRA is actually available online, so anybody could go look at that if they want to.
Can I answer
the
that?
Other point I want. Yeah.
Yeah. I did manage to find most of the RRAs. The RRAs, all the ones I found, refer for. At least in relation to things like what, who is elements must be transferred, refer to a registry specification or a name similar to that, which in general is not online as far as I can tell. I didn't look at .coop, so I don't know about that occasion.
Sure. Okay. Okay, well, the main point, the original point I wanted to get back to was the one that Volker had pointed out as well in the chat, that poll messages can be sent from the registry. For instance, with .coop, because of our eligibility requirements, we actually do send out poll messages if we have revoked a domain or changed the status of the domain based on verification for .coop eligibility. So that's, again, another example where we are expecting the registrars to pick up those poll messages and adjust their statuses, et cetera, based on that information, and they don't always do that. And so, you know, we have to make sure that they have that polling set up properly. So just wanted to use that as another example of communication from the registry to the registrar.
Hmm. So it's possible to do. It's just that there aren't sort of standardized routine ways to do it across all the registries, it sounds like. At best, I think this is something that... I tell you what, I'm going to listen to this part of the transcript and rewrite this. And I thank you all for setting me straight. I was completely out to lunch on this one. So, okay, well, those were the two big topics that were on my mind, and I appreciate you helping me with both of those. For the last quarter hour of the call, I throw the conversation to you. Are there things in this draft that you spotted as you reviewed it that you'd like to draw our attention to and correct? Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Steve. One thing that I saw and that I wasn't didn't look quite right to me, but maybe I've been missing some of the conversation here. There are a couple of references to the RAA eliminating the might eliminate the requirement for registrar data escrow. On the version that I downloaded from the wiki page, it's on line 407. I'm sure that number is not right here. And it comes up a couple of times about, you know, if changes to the RAA eliminate the requirement for registrar data escrow. And I went and looked at the last version of the RAA, and there's a data escrow provision, and it just seems to, you know, it's section 3.6, and I don't think it's changed in the recent drafts. And it just says registrar, you know, has to submit the data to a reputable escrow agent, mutually approved. I don't think it makes any distinction between thin and thick or talks about eliminating data escrow. So I may be missing something here, but and I'm sure the registrars on the call can set me straight, but I didn't understand the references to possible changes to the RAA to eliminate the requirement for registrar data escrow.
Thanks, Steve. It looks like we've got Tim and Volker coming in to answer that question. Tim, go ahead.
I think, you know, Steve is right. There's, you know, that's not taken out of there, and it's not likely to be anytime soon. I think where it came from was just in some of the conversations that we've had as a group, there is, you know, there was that possibility, even if it's in the RAA today, that because it does provide for, you know, the RAA provides for amendments now. So at some point, you know, there could be a request to amend that if, in as things progress here in the future, it just doesn't seem to serve a purpose, you know, for registrars to continuing escrowing data, especially if all registries become thick, all the thick registries are actually authoritative for the data. They're maintaining the database. They're also doing escrow in, you know, one or two places. Then it becomes sort of, you know, onerously redundant, perhaps, or registrars might view it that way, to continue escrowing somebody else's data themselves. I think that's kind of where it came from. Now, you know, true, that's probably, you know, a slight possibility for sometime in the future. So if it doesn't, you know, we don't deem it as worth continuing to mention here, you know, I wouldn't object to that. But I think that's kind of where it came from.
Thanks, Tim, because, I mean, before I get to Volker, clearly one way to do this is I could just go through and find those references and scrub them out. And, you know, that was very helpful to get the sense of how important this is to you. Volker, go ahead.
Yeah, Tim has already answered the question very well. Data escrow will not be affected by the new RAA. And, in fact, there is even a provision in the new RAA that refers to whose privacy services, where the privacy services offered by the registrar or an affiliated entity of the registrar, that the underlying data must be escrowed as well. So the registrar data escrow is not going away. And in some cases, the escrow data may even be different from the data that the registry has in their whois and is escrowing.
Okay. I think we're seeing a trend here. Steve, back to Steve was there, but...
Yeah, Marika put in the chat the line number, so that's what I was going to raise.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. All right, well, what I take out of this is let me go through the draft. I've got an action to go through the draft and find those references and rework the draft so that it makes sense if they're gone. They sort of, in some cases, I think that specific reference echoes up and down the text just a little bit, so I'll hunt for that and let you know what I did. Good one. Any others? Volker, is that a new hand? Do you want to come in with another thought, or is that an old one left over? That's left over. Okay. We've got time for one more. We spent about 7 minutes on that one. Any other? I thought that was a good catch, too. It's a substantive point. It's not just, you know, an editing detail. That's a change. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, my only other question was going to the very beginning of the report, and the preliminary recommendations are blank, And the conclusions and next steps comes in later. I'm just wondering, at what point do these get filled in? I'm looking at section 1.3 and 1.5.
Yeah.
Does this go? I assume when it goes out with some kind of preliminary recommendation, and then maybe after we have comments, we have the conclusions. But I'm just not clear on when that gets plugged in.
I have to check with Marika. When we did this, I think both of us felt, well, let's make sure that this thing flies before we go to all the trouble of posting all the summaries up there. And so I think it's possible that we could, for the next draft, pound those in, or, as you say, we can. I think it makes the report much easier to read if we have those up there in the initial draft. So I'm presuming that that's where we're headed, but I see Marika's got her hand up, and let her speak. Go ahead, Marika.
This is Marika. That's what we typically do. Basically, we first want to have the body of the report, that we have agreement there, or at least have a good sense of where things are going, because otherwise we just need to keep on rewriting the executive summary. And basically, I think especially for the section on recommendations, we typically just really copy and paste what is exactly in the section that deals with the recommendations, as that's normally the key element or the main element where we would look for input on. And that language is currently in section or in chapter 7. So I think as soon as we have a sense that people are happy with the language as it is there, that's something that we can start translating into an executive summary. But as I said, often we, for those really key sections, we try to take as much of the original language in those chapters. As I think we're also cognizant of the fact that maybe some people only read the executive summary, so we really want to make sure that we're very accurate in what we're recommending and what we're looking for input on as well.
I think for purposes of conversation, let's do that for the next draft of this, Marika, because I think that as people read that draft, that may pop their eyes open and they'll go, what? Oh, my goodness. And then, we might get some more substantive discussion in the group next week. Do you have any terrible feelings against that idea? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I would actually maybe, as a first step, maybe ask by when people think they'll have had a chance to read through the full report. Because I'm just worried that we can spend time on getting the executive summary right, but if then in the next meeting we're going to rewrite whole sections, it means we have to redo that work as well in the executive summary. So I would rather do the other way around of asking the group first, by when do you think you'll have a chance to review the bulk of the report, which I really think is sections, mainly I think sections 5 and 7. And then based on the feedback we received there, we have an indication of whether we'll still see major overhaul or major additions, and determine then at that time whether it's the right time to actually really do the executive summary and then really try to have the holistic picture there.
Okay, so why don't we do this? Why don't we do... Oh, Alan, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm going to strongly support Marika. Instead of having blank, maybe we need some boilerplate there saying, this will be filled in once their firm sees section X, and pointing to where the recommendations are right now so people don't think they're blank. But otherwise, to add a bit of humor towards the end of this call, otherwise we're going to have synchronization problems between the two versions, and we're going to have a meta discussion on our who is synchronization. And the last thing we need to do is have two different recommendations which are subtly different. So
okay, Uncle, I give up. I like your idea of pointing to the relevant sections. I think that's good, because the recommendations are buried in those sections.
They are indeed, and that would be a fine thing to do. But let's not create our own problems. We have enough real work to do.
I get that. Steve, I think you get last word on today's call.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
I'm fine with that suggestion, and I guess my question is, when do you, since there's going to be some rewriting of some of these sections that we discussed today, or some changes, when do you think that would be available? And I think if we can get that in the next couple of days, we should aim to for everybody to review this prior to next Tuesday and try to see if we can wrap it up then. Is that realistic?
that's my goal, Steve. You know, I've gotten so deeply into this document that I'm planning to do the next draft, and you know, my goal is to have it out. Either close a business tomorrow, or maybe close a business Thursday is what worked for me the last time, and certainly by then, I should be able to get another one out as well. So I agree, and then if we can have people really take a hard look for next week's call, I think we're getting very close to wrapping this one up. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I know we're on a tight timeline, but I find on these kind of documents that when you've read them too many times, things become invisible.
Yeah.
And they do benefit from putting them away for a week and then going back to them. So if we
And flipping off all the change stuff,
yeah,
and reading it, you know, back and forth. I think all of that is true, but at the same time, you know, this document hasn't been moving a whole lot for several weeks now, and so I'm going to put a little pressure on people, because I think there's also an advantage to getting this out ahead of the rush for Durban, and if we can do that sooner, that's good.
Well, that wasn't an argument for the rest of us who haven't read it, or read it recently, or read it at all, not to read it. I'm just saying, for people who have been heavily into it, putting it away for a few days or a week, you often benefit from that if we have the luxury of time.
Yeah. Well, we certainly do at this point. Okay, folks, it's the top of the hour. I appreciate all the help, as always, and we'll see you in a week. We're, I think, getting pretty close. Thanks a million.
Thanks,
Michael.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.